Track 2, News. Hello and welcome to the Black Country Talking News. It's Wednesday, the 31st of October 2018, and today in the studio we have Martin and John as the sound engineers, myself, Brian, Jill and Bronwyn. So without more ado, Jill will start us off with the news.
Debenhams confirms 50 stores will shut as 4,000 staff face redundancy. The future of stores in Walsall, Wolverhampton, Maryhill and Birmingham is in doubt. Debenhams at the Mander Centre in Wolverhampton only opened last year. Wolverhampton South East MP Pat McFadden said this morning, "This is obviously concerning as Debenhams is the anchor tenant in the revamped Mander Centre. The investment that brought them there was very important to the city. The high street is really hurting in retail terms, as we have seen from the difficulties of a number of chains. We have to hope that the Wolverhampton store will be okay." A spokesman for Debenhams said, "We have identified up to 50 stores accounting for under 15% of total sales, which are currently profitable, but where we do not see a long-term future and which we intend to exit over the next 3 to 5 years. This is an ongoing 5-year programme and we are not disclosing a list of those stores." Boss Sergio Buca said, "It has been a tough year for retail in 2018 and our performance reflects that. We are taking decisive steps to strengthen Debenhams in a market that remains volatile and challenging." Mr. Buca insisted, "Debenhams remains a strong and trusted brand with 19 million customers shopping with us over the past year. With a strengthened balance sheet, we will focus investment behind our strategic priorities and ensure that Debenhams has a sustainable and profitable future. I can promise my 26,000 staff across the UK that we will work very hard to protect as many stores and as many jobs as we can." To compound matters, Debenhams is also the subject of a takeover talk, with speculation building that Mike Ashley is set to merge it with his newly acquired House of Fraser. The Sports Direct tycoon owns just under 30% of Debenhams, close to the threshold at which he must launch an official takeover bid. Mr. Ashley promised to return House of Fraser into the Harrods of the High Street after taking over the chain, which includes Beatty's in Wolverhampton last month. Robert Hayton, head of business rates at real estate advisor Altus Group, said, "Department stores are beginning to look like the dinosaurs of the High Street. Big rents, high rate liabilities, large staffing needs, and leases that are difficult to give up. All this conspire to create a beast unable to adapt to a rapidly changing retail climate."
Digs are taking place across Birmingham and Staffordshire ahead of major HS2 work. Archaeologists are investigating 10,000 years of British history along the line of the new high-speed rail route in what they say is Europe's largest dig. Experts from the HS2 project have begun work on the programme to excavate sites along the 150-mile route from London to the West Midlands, the company said. Neolithic tools, medieval pottery and Victorian time capsules have already been discovered. In total, more than 1,000 archaeologists are set to explore more than 60 separate sites, from prehistoric and Roman settlements to those from the Industrial Revolution and the Second World War. Mark Thurston, HS2 chief executive, said, "Before we bore the tunnels, lay the tracks and build the stations, an unprecedented amount of archaeological research is now taking place between London and Birmingham. This is the largest archaeological exploration ever in Britain, employing a record number of skilled archaeologists and heritage specialists from across the UK and beyond. Archaeological sites being investigated along the route include a prehistoric hunter-gatherer site on the outskirts of London, a Roman-British town in Fleet Marston, Aylesbury, a 1,000-year-old demolished medieval church and burial ground in Buckinghamshire, and a World War II bombing decoy in Lichfield. HS2 said all artefacts and human remains would be treated with dignity, care and respect, and a 4-part documentary on the history of Britain that is exposed by the project will air on the BBC in 2019-2020. Patrick Holland, BBC Two controller, said, "This is a major series following this unprecedented archaeological project. The HS2 digs promise to reveal secrets throughout a vast timeline of British history, and I'm delighted that BBC Two will be following the journey." Tom MacDonald, head of commissioning at the BBC's Natural History and Specialist Factual Unit, added, "It's thrilling to be there from the very start of what is unquestionably one of the most significant archaeological endeavours in British history. It promises to make us reinterrogate what we think we know about British history and give us an extraordinary and privileged insight into the past." Duncan Wilson, chief executive of government heritage body Historic England, said, "With the building of HS2 comes a once-in-a-generation opportunity to improve our understanding of how people have shaped England's landscapes over thousands of years, from the first prehistoric farmers through Roman and Saxon and Viking incomers to the more recent past."
A Black Country Chamber of Commerce chief says the region has plenty to shout about. Dudley Borough is already a home to innovative and prosperous business. It's how we build on that, says a senior industry figure. Colin Crane is one of the leads on the Dudley Borough Vision, and as lead, he will be putting together the detail of how the borough can attract new businesses and support existing ones to flourish. The Vision, launched earlier this year, talks about creating a borough renowned as a home to a host of innovative and prosperous businesses operating in high-quality locations with space to grow, sustainable energy supplies and investing in their workforce. Corin says the borough is already well on track to do this by 2030, and with the DY5 Enterprise Zone and its ability to draw in new firms from across the country. He said, "We need to look at a range of things, including a reliable, affordable and sustainable energy supply, a portfolio of quality industrial and commercial premises, and ensuring we have attractive job and career prospects for the workforce." The borough already has some exciting prospects in the pipeline, including the planned leisure and retail development in Trindle Road, Dudley, the proposed Midland Metro extension from Wednesbury to Brierley Hill, as well as the DY5 Enterprise Zone, which continues to bring new businesses to the area. The seven themes for the vision are an affordable and attractive place to live, a place where everybody has the education and skills they need, a place of healthy, safe, resilient communities with the ability to shape their own future, better connection with high quality and affordable transport, a home to host innovative and prosperous businesses, a place to visit and enjoy full of vibrant towns and neighbourhoods.
The John Lewis boss turned West Midlands mayor is hoping to breathe life back into the High Street. Andy Street has gone back to his roots as part of a multi-million pound scheme to revitalise the flagging fortunes of town centres in the Black Country. The former John Lewis boss oversaw a profits surge at the department store chain before he quit in 2016 to become West Midlands mayor. And now he has set his sights on breathing new life into the Black Country's struggling high streets. The mayor has launched a project aimed at getting the sales tills ringing again, but also to change the focus in town centres to include more independent traders, new homes and community activities. As part of the West Midlands Combined Authorities WMCA programme, Walsall, Bilston, West Bromwich and Dudley, as well as Bordesley and Birmingham, will all get a share of cash from the region's £350 million housing fund. Mr. Street said, "The future of the High Street will not only be about shops, it will be about public services, homes, small businesses and community activities. There are many opportunities for our High Streets. We must find a positive future for them, which embraces technological change. The future of our communities depends on it. We want to be the region that leads the way nationally in reimagining the role and function of town centres in the digital age." Councillor Mike Bird, Walsall's council leader and the YMCA lead for housing and land, said the situation for retail in the town was very dire, but said there was still hope for it to be a retail destination. "There has to be a mixture of things on offer," he said. "We need to encourage more independent traders and, more importantly, a leisure offer, which I believe is the way forward for a lot of our high streets. Mr. Street, who saw gross sales double at John Lewis during his 10-year stint as managing director, has said it is premature to declare the high street dead. He believes that with the right investment and strategy, they can once again become the focus of our communities. More town centres are expected to be brought into the programme next year.
A gang who flew £500,000 worth of drugs into prisons using drones made a fatal error which saw them jailed for more than 37 years. Drones were used to smuggle drugs into jails, including Oakwood and Featherstone near Wolverhampton. But the sophisticated plot was foiled when one drone went astray and landed short of the intended target. It provided detectives with the evidence they needed to crack the case. Investigators were able to check the flight plans of the lost drone and discover where it had been before. The mistake led to the downfall of the drugs crew, who were handed jail terms ranging from 3 to 10 years. Gang leader Lee Anslow, who was serving a sentence at Her Majesty's Prison, Huel, in Worcestershire, and is the nephew of notorious drug dealer John Anslow, who was sprung from a prison van in 2012, was found with digital scales and £20,000 worth of drugs in his cell after police smashed the network. A court heard how drivers and lookouts conspired with prisoners to smuggle drugs into 7 jails, which also included HMP Birmingham and HMP Liverpool. A total of 11 drones, including some which had crashed, were seized during police inquiries into flights which also targeted prisons in Worcestershire, Cheshire and Lancashire. Detectives were keen to tackle this new kind of threat to prison security and will be hopeful the lengthy sentences will deter other crooks from trying a similar trick. Judge Simon Drew, QC, who handed suspended jail terms and a community order to 6 others involved in the plot at Birmingham Crown Court, said tough sentences were essential to try and stamp out such plots. He told them, "The method you chose to do this was both carefully planned and executed. Each of you played a part in a wider conspiracy, which resulted in approximately 100 separate deliveries. This was a sophisticated commercial operation, and due to the high value placed on drugs and mobile phones in prisons, designed to make those of you who ran the operation hundreds of thousands of pounds in profit." Speaking after the case, Detective Inspector Gareth Williams of West Midlands Police said around £110,000 worth of drugs had been recovered from 11 drones. DI Williams said Anslow and other senior members of the gang had regarded themselves as untouchable as they orchestrated the drone drops. DI Williams added, "This is a landmark case. It's the biggest drone drug smuggling racket into prisons ever seen in the UK."
A plan to build luxury new homes in the middle of a Dudley beauty spot would cut a much-loved nature reserve in half, residents and dog walkers fear. An application to build 9 spacious 4- and 5-bedroom homes with double garages in Saltwell's local nature reserve has been submitted to Dudley Council planners, but the proposal has sparked outrage from those living nearby. Bill Weston, who takes his dogs to the reserve daily and who has worked to help make the Netherton beauty spot more accessible for the disabled, said the plans that have been submitted would virtually cut this reserve in half. Residents have already joined forces to start a campaign to oppose the development. A Facebook page has been set up, plus an online petition which has already been signed by more than 5,000 people. Campaigner Leslie Dunn describes the site, on which the historic Saltwell's house once stood, as an absolute gem, and said it would be a loss not just to local people but to everybody in Dudley and tourists to the area. Light pollution from the site is a worry. The wood would never be dark again, which would affect nocturnal animals. We're worried about the trees, some of which are protected. I think there will be tremendous damage to the wood when they put services to the site. Councillor Chris Barnett, who represents Quarry Bank and Dudley Wood, said he'd be taking up the fight on behalf of worried residents, and he told the Stourbridge News, "I will be doing everything I can to see this planning application is refused." In an access statement, Birmingham-based developers KB Extrusions said, "The external appearance of the houses will be designed to provide a continuous street elevation with grand frontages to represent quality modern homes. The elevations of the dwellings are set at various angles to the street to provide character and individuality to the overall street scene. The proposed new properties will be marketed towards medium to large families or to anyone looking to upgrade from their existing house. Anyone wishing to submit an official comment on the planning application can do so on the Council's planning website and search for planning application there, P18/1373. The deadline for submissions is November the 21st. People wishing to find out more about the campaign to protect the site from development can check out the Facebook page, which is called Save Saltwells Nature Reserve.
Two babies have had surgery for spina bifida while still in the womb, a procedure now available in the UK for the first time. The spina bifida surgeries were successfully performed by a team at London's University College Hospital this summer on two babies while they were still in the womb. Spina bifida is usually treated after birth, but research shows repairing the baby's spine earlier can stop the loss of spinal fluid and lead to a better long-term health and mobility outcome. A 30-strong team carried out the two operations, coordinated by UCL's Professor Anne David, who has been working for 3 years to bring the procedure to patients in the UK. She said mothers previously had to travel to the United States, Belgium, or Switzerland for the procedure. "It's fantastic. Women now don't have to travel out of the UK." The surgery team for UCLH and the Great Ormond Street Hospital previously travelled to Belgium to train at a facility in Leuven, where more than 40 such operations have been carried out. It's important to be able to offer the surgery to patients here in the UK. Spina bifida is a condition that develops during pregnancy when the bones of the spine do not form properly, creating a gap that leaves the spinal cord unprotected. It can cause a baby's spinal fluid to leak and put brain development at risk, potentially leading to long-term health and mobility problems. More than 200 children are born with spina bifida every year in the UK. The surgery, which takes some 90 minutes, carries a risk of premature labour, but less invasive keyhole methods are being explored. We put the mum on some drugs that help relax them, but there is still a risk, Professor David said. She said a fetoscopic approach is being developed with the hope that this will further minimise maternal complications.
More than 1,000 members of staff at Dudley Council are set to be offered specialist training in how to spot signs of modern slavery. Dudley Council bosses are proposing a new statement and policy on modern slavery and human trafficking, which includes strict checks on suppliers used by the authority. Nearly 250 staff have already received training across 10 sessions in September and October, with plans to train up to 800 more before the end of the year. The programme enables council officers to learn how to identify and report suspected incidents of modern slavery. The statement and policy will also require all suppliers to the council to sign contracts to confirm that they are compliant with the Modern Slavery Act 2015, in a bid to ensure slavery or human trafficking is not taking place in any of the authority's supply chains. It confirms the council's procedures for vetting new employees, including checks on whether they have the right to work in the UK. It also outlines a whistleblowing policy which encourages employees to report concerns without fear of reprisals. The statement and policy says the council only uses specified and reputable employment agencies to source temporary labour and undertakes due diligence when taking on new suppliers. Councillor Gay Partridge, Dudley Council's Cabinet Member for Community Safety, said, We are committed to doing all that we can to ensure that there is no modern slavery or human trafficking in our supply chains. We will not support or deal with any business knowingly involved in slavery or human trafficking. We will work with communities and partners to ensure a robust response to tackling these issues. We are confident that steps outlined in our action plan will address the Council's commitment to preventing slavery and human trafficking. As well as this, we will also be signing the Charter Against Modern Slavery, which is above and beyond our statutory requirements.
The Chief Inspector for Hospitals has reported further enforcement action is to be taken against the Dudley Group as serious concerns about the Trust's emergency department continue. Inspectors visited Russell's Hall Hospital, which is run by the Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust, in August, and looked at urgent and emergency care amid continued safety concerns. It found numerous concerns and areas of poor practice, following which the Care Quality Commission, known as the CQC, has placed a further urgent condition on the Trust's registration. Professor Ted Baker, Chief Inspector of Hospitals, said, "We remain very concerned about the emergency department at Russell's Hall Hospital as a result of our inspection. This condition relates to the provision of specialist medical support into the emergency department. The condition requires the Trust to report to the CQC on a weekly basis, detailing the action it is taking to ensure specialist teams are resourced and have capacity to offer clinical oversight within the emergency department. It must also report back on the outcome of auditing, monitoring and implementing additional clinical support for the department." Russell's Hall currently has a requires improvement rating overall, but urgent and emergency services at the hospital have been rated as inadequate since an inspection in December 2017. Inspectors remain concerned about the speed and effectiveness with which staff responded to patients with serious and deteriorating conditions. While an electronic tracking system allowed for patients to be assigned correctly within the department, staff did not monitor it effectively. Some patients with suspected sepsis were still not being identified or managed properly, and inspectors found staff who continued to be frustrated at the focus on sepsis and did not fully engage with the need to assess for the condition. Care records were not always written and managed in a way that kept patients safe, and there was insufficient senior medical and specialist oversight, which affected the safety and management of patients. However, the inspection also highlighted some improvement, which included the ambulance triage area, which was seen to function more effectively, and there was improvement in patient flow. To read the latest CQC report in full, go to www.cqc.org.uk/location/RNA01.
Vigilante wardens are spreading nails on a Black Country road to stop parents parking their cars there while they watch their children play football. Some 1,500 tacks, which could puncture car tyres, have been cleared from Benjamin Drive in Homer Hill Park, Hales Owen, a local councillor has said. Councillor Richard Bodie told a meeting of Dudley Council of the bizarre repeated attacks of attempted vandalism during a discussion about the future of the park, which is based next to the Lime Gardens retirement village, saying the road through the park was the only access to the residential centre. He said parents often blocked the route and parked on pathways. He added, "Because we have a lot of children, they all want to watch by getting as close as they can. This causes mayhem on a road which is only two-way in parts. This has led to a person or persons sprinkling nails down the edge of the road. And there is an elderly gentleman who contacts me nearly every day to let me know how many nails he's picked up. I would say we are into now 1,500 nails, because it's been going on for such a long time, and they are all the same particular type of nail." Asked if he knew who was responsible, he said, "I can only summarise that it is a resident." Homer Hill Park is home to the Netherton Colts Football Club, and Councillor Bodie added that during school holidays and weekends, Benjamin Drive and surrounding roads were packed. "We need more parking," the councillor added. Council officers told relevant authorities that they had taken steps to reduce congestion in the area, but it was limited in what it could do.
And with that news item from Jill, we'll bring this week's news to an end. So it's goodbye from Brian.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from Bronwyn.